This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
Well, the veterinary profession is under huge amounts of pressure at the moment. There's a shortage of vets all across Victoria, especially in regional Victoria, where some pet owners are waiting up to weeks to be able to see a vet, or they're forced to drive hours to emergency care. But, Jono, Kendall, more and more of us have pets now. There was a huge increase in pet ownership during the pandemic, and that pressure has resulted in some vets even shutting their doors altogether.
Yeah, which is always sad, Rish. Yeah, thank you. Good morning. Because animal shelters are experiencing a record number of pets being surrendered because many owners can no longer afford to keep their pet or just pay the bills, the medical bills, that is. And the number of people forced to do that, to surrender their pets to shelters because they can no longer afford to keep them, has risen by 17%.
That's a huge number, isn't it? So I guess that's the reason why things like VetiCare have been flagged. You may have heard about this last year. VetCare in Victoria would become free or subsidised, and that would be under new proposed laws by the Animal Justice Party. They want to see a Medicare-type system, but for animals, and it would hopefully make seeing a vet more affordable and more accessible.
And that includes establishing public vet hospitals, upskilling vet nurses so they can do more of the things that vets do, and setting up a bulk billing model for vet care. But owning a pet is expensive. We all know that. But we also know that for some people, pets are so important, so just vital for everyday life and their mental health and their emotional well-being.
So is this what the veterinary profession needs? You know, VetiCare? Would it take some pressure off vets, and would it entice more people into the profession?
And should it be more affordable to be able to have a pet? And would it be more affordable with access to something like VetiCare? Or is owning a pet a privilege, not a right? Should non-pet owners have to pay for other people's pets?
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
Jono, already texts coming in on this. This one, lockdown revealed just how crucial pets are to people who are vulnerable or lonely. It's crucial that their care is affordable. And then another saying, Medivet, you must be joking. Government budgets are stretched already. Priority must be given to aged care, hospital, homeless, not pets. And this is how it's going to roll a little bit today.
Yeah, look, so most of the discussions I've had with people have been along those lines, saying, what? You know, we haven't even got dental care as part of Medicare yet, and we're talking about VetiCare. But, you know, there's lots of different perspectives on this. And another text just saying, get a pet, the cost is part of the gig. So,
and the cost is huge, not only the rising cost in pet food, but pet bills, we know, are really, really expensive. And a part of the reason why a lot of vets are either walking away from the industry or not entering it is that emotional stress and pressure that's put on them from pet owners when somebody is told what it's going to cost to have their pet operated on or to get the sort of procedure that they need. The average person just simply can't afford that at the moment. But then is it the vet's responsibility to be able to make that up? So where do we find this line? I just wonder whether more and more of us own pets now. And unless you, this is going to sound harsh, Jono, but I'm going to say it, right?
Yeah.
Unless you really, really need that pet, if you can't afford it, should it be somebody else's responsibility to pay for it?
Yeah, well, that's the question. That's the question that is at the heart of this discussion about VetiCare. And, you know, we know that the cost of living is going up, the cost of food and petrol and medicine and everything is going up. So, and that's all the same with vet bills as well. So Dr. Bronwyn Orr is president of the Australian Veterinary Association. Good morning. Is VetiCare a good idea?
Morning. Thanks for having me. Certainly, we welcome any conversation on increased public investment in veterinary care. Generally, in Australia, there is no public investment. It's a completely private industry. And it does mean that a lot of the public good that veterinarians do, we actually subsidise out of our own pockets. So things like treating wildlife, treating stray animals, treating animals in emergencies, like bushfires and all that sort of thing, is currently something that veterinarians already subsidise. So we really welcome the idea of more conversations in this area.
Bronwyn, just more of us owning pets now, or maybe more of us owning pets that actually can't afford pets?
Yeah, look, there are fixed costs required to care for animals, obviously food, you know, preventative medical care such as vaccinations. But then there are also the larger costs such as emergency vet care. And, you know, unfortunately, when you take on a pet, you do have to anticipate that there will be some costs involved, which is why we really encourage people to think about either something like pet insurance or setting up a savings account specifically for your pet so that you have that money there. Because, you know, people these days increasingly want to pursue interventional treatments for their animals, so saving them using things like chemotherapy and advanced surgery and all that sort of stuff, which as vets, you know, we love to be able to save, you know, all the patients that walk in through our doors. But there are increased costs associated with that. And, you know, I think a lot of people still have this image of what Medicare and what human healthcare costs, which is absolutely not the real picture. You know, what we see in terms of what medication costs, visits to doctors, all that sort of thing in the human healthcare system is massively subsidised. And so sometimes when they're faced with increased vet bills, you know, there is that bit of a sticker shock because they're just not aware of how much it costs to deliver this level of care.
Yet the two different types of care are being compared, and they're being compared really thoroughly on our text line as well. People saying, well, what about dental care? You know, we can't even get dental care, and yet you're expecting me to subsidise somebody else's pet. The two really are being compared, and I think that's where people's brains go on this, Bronwyn.
They've called it VetiCare, which is a
play. Probably doesn't help, yeah.
Absolutely, but you raise a really good point there because it's actually probably better to compare veterinary care to dental care in the sense that dental care in this country is largely private. It's a private industry. We don't ask dentists to, you know, give up some of their salary so people can get their teeth cleaned. It's expected that it's a private service, whether that's right or wrong. But it's important to note also there is public dental care. So if you have an abscess in your tooth or something, Australia is not going to let you just suffer with that. You can go to the emergency
centre. There's a pretty long line. I just don't think it's that simple. And I don't want this to become a dental versus pets thing, but it's really
absolutely.
People do not have access to dental care at the moment, even if there is a public system. So I'm just not sure if that's comparable.
I guess the point I was trying to raise, absolutely not trying to start a battle between the two, is that there is nothing like that in the veterinary world. So there is no, other than charities, there is nothing. You can't go to the emergency centre and expect that, you know, you'll get some subsidised care. There's no, you know, Medicare funding for lower income people who can get dental care. So absolutely, it's not the right system perhaps for dental care, but there's nothing like that in the veterinary world. And I think that's the big issue.
All right. We'll just hang there, Dr. Bronwyn Orr, because Coco joins us from Inglewood now. Morning, Coco. What do you think about VetiCare?
It's going to be unpopular, but I think absolutely not. No way. And the reason for this is because I came from a fairly low socioeconomic family, and when I was a child, we had animals everywhere, and we didn't have cats that were dissexed. We had animals bloody everywhere, okay, to the point where I didn't understand what was happening until much later in life. And now that I am older, I realise now that we were not responsible at all. Mm. And I have always, now, before I even think about getting an animal, the first thing I think about is, can I afford this animal? Can I afford to dissect it? And the first thing I do also is I look up pet insurance, because pet insurance, if I can't squirrel away money every time and, you know, put aside money and have that well of money for my pet, then I need to look at pet insurance, right?
There's a text here, though, from Lee Coco that says it's not about mm-hmm. helping people to afford their pets. It's about the animal welfare. If people can't afford mm-hmm. to care for their pets properly, especially vet care, it's the animals who suffer. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But as people are saying, we don't even have dental care for humans. And if we can't even take care of our people, how we take care of our people is important as well, okay? And I understand that animals are important. I love animals, you know, but I, growing up as someone who, my family didn't give us the right.
And that's a really interesting point. And I'll put this back to you, Bronwyn, because, I mean, it's fascinating, isn't it, that the comparison between animals and humans is so strong in this conversation. And that's got even stronger, I think, over the years, in that just anecdotally, I've noticed that we treat animals like humans.
Oh, there's so many people who call their pets, you know,
their children.
They're pets, their pet mum or, you know, whatever. And they call them their fur babies and all this kind of stuff.
And they sleep in our beds, not in kennels. And the money that they cost just to purchase them, the cost associated and the way we treat pets now, Dr. Bronwyn Orr, has that got something to do with this conversation, do you think?
I think that it's part of a wider conversation about, you know, how we perceive animals. You know, traditionally the value of animals has been literally based on their resale value. They're treated legally as a piece of property, like a chair or something like that. Although I think most people would recognise that they're not quite the same. And so there's more of this emphasis on the inherent value, and that does mean that, you know, people are looking for ways to keep them living longer and healthier and that sort of thing. And as I mentioned before, that probably does contribute a little bit. But I think it's important here that the conversation doesn't have to be an either or. We don't have to have, you know, all our money going to one thing and not other things. You know, there's lots of worthy causes out there, and I think that animal welfare is probably a pretty important one to most people. It's just a matter of getting the balance right. And so from our perspective, we're just really keen to make sure that people keep having this conversation about, you know, should there be any support or public investment in veterinary care, particularly as it pertains to animal welfare.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying. You know, a chair is not the same thing as a dog. You know, a dog is a sentient being. It's a living thing. But do we humanise our pets too much these days? There has been this movement towards pet holidays and pet spas and pet pools and pet products and this whole industry built around servicing pets. Do you think we humanise them?
I mean, that's a difficult question. I think it's important that we always focus on what's valuable to the animal. So what we might think is, you know, something that they will like isn't necessarily the same thing as what they actually enjoy. So it's important to let dogs be dogs and cats be cats. And that means that, you know, for dogs, they really enjoy, you know, running around, sniffing on their walks, rolling in mud, that sort of thing. Whether they enjoy some of these other things that we think that they should have, that's another question. But as long as we're focusing on, you know, the experience of the animal and making sure that they have a life worth living, I think that's a pretty good guidance.
What do you think? It feels like the camps are divided firmly either side. This very, very black and white conversation here. Happy International Cat Day. Great timing for this conversation and topic. I'm worried about people questioning whether they can keep their pets due to rising costs and changes in situations as a result of COVID. What about the poor animals? Rescue organisations are already overwhelmed. They absolutely are. We're going to speak to a few of them in just a moment. There's been a rise of 17% of people that are surrendering their pets. But it goes on to say, Jono, don't forget about the amazing mental health benefits that pets provide people. I don't know what the answer is, but this is a great discussion that's taking place. This is from Amy in Doncaster East. And this is the thing, it's really a really tricky conversation, isn't it? It's really tricky.
Yep. Yeah, it is, because you're balancing lots of needs here. But I just want to pick on something you said before, Dr. Bronwyn, when you were talking about it doesn't have to be an either-or discussion, and there could be, you know, were you alluding to the fact there could be kind of a watered-down veti care, or not necessarily establishing publicly funded vet hospitals, but like a veti care light?
Oh, yeah, look, we're so excited that people are actually engaging in this conversation and you know, Vedicare as a policy solution, you know, certainly on the fence about that. But I think the fact that we're now talking about, well, should there be any public investment in veterinary care? And as I said before, you know, whether it's wildlife or animals in an emergency situation, stray animals, I think, you know, and low socioeconomic people, whether they're, you know, pensioners or whatever, there are huge values in treating these animals. But at the moment, that's all, you know, consumed by the private veterinarian. That's essentially what the veterinary industry has been supporting for years. And we're happy to do so because we see social good there. But now I guess the question is, well, if there is social and public good, then is there a level of public investment that should be required with that specific work?
Dr. Bronwyn-Orr, thanks so much for your time and your insights.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
The President of the Australian Veterinary Association. Text after text on this, Jono. We're going to get to calls in just a moment as well, so hang tight. This, Rochelle and Jono, we wanted to replace our pet when it died, but we decided as we entered retirement that we just couldn't afford it. And the possibility to be our companion for 15 years, we've got friends who got a new dog during lockdown. It's cost them north of $10,000 for the puppy, new fencing, repeated vet visits, and all of that appropriate equipment. Hope's in Geelong. Hi, Hope.
Hi, good morning. I think that we need to look at this in a broad sense because there's a lot of work that vets do, and I think that in society it's problematic the way that we think about animals as a whole. I would like to see vet care maybe for wildlife. Because I think that in one breath, some people may talk about their pets, members of their family, but in the other breath, not really doing anything for the wider environment. Or I think there's like a classism about what we see.
Well, we heard just before Bronwyn saying that actually normally comes out of the pocket of the vet. I'm starting to wonder why so many of them are leaving the industry. It's costing them.
And I think that's partly why this Vedicare idea has been put forward by Animal Justice MP Andy Medic, is because there is so much pressure on vets to treat the paying customers, but then they are obliged to treat wildlife and on top of their paying customers as well. Margaret is in Bacchus Marsh. G'day, Margaret. What are you thinking?
Yes, good morning. Well, look, I'm concerned for pensioners or low-income people who bought pets, say, 10 years ago or longer. I'm one of those. And with the cost of living going up and everything changing, particularly since COVID. And also, I went to the vet recently and I heard that they're not, they said they're not taking instalment payments on anymore.
I wonder too whether there is something like, you know, we spoke before, Margaret, about a watered down version. I wonder if there could be like a pensioners or a seniors version, or if you've taken an animal that's been surrendered, or if you can prove that you have it for reasons, whether it be, we know there's a rising group of people now that use them for PTSD. I wonder whether we can look at a section of society that needs this as opposed to people that can maybe afford it. Would that be something that you think would work?
Oh, yes. I'd really support that.
I don't know how we select these people, by the way.
No. Well, you know, that proves they're on low income. And it's easy to prove that you've got a dog that you need for some reason, for sight or company or whatever. But I'm finding it now. I wouldn't have got my dog and cat if I knew that this is where I'd be now. Because the cost of food, and I just, the vets just don't understand and say, look, we're going to do all these tests and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I just say no, because I want the pet to be comfortable and we'll treat the basic problem, but we're not going to go exploring to check livers and everything else, liver and everything else, because I just can't afford it.
Can't afford it. Now, just lastly, Margaret, you said that you can't pay in instalments anymore with your vet.
That's right. That's what I heard at the vet.
Have you previously paid in instalments?
Yes. What we've been able to do is, with our local vet, is arrange an instalment plan prior to the treatment. So you agree to pay a certain amount a fortnight until it's paid down. But now the vet doesn't offer that anymore. And I heard them tell somebody, well, you're just going to have to find a vet who'll treat your pet free.
That's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah.
It is tough. It's putting us in a really bad position because we love our pets. But you know, the
price of food has gone up. I think I was reading something like 12%, you know, for pet food. And you add to that everything else, petrol and just cost of living in general. That's a huge amount. So it's different if you decide to get a pet tomorrow and you know what that cost is. But if, like Margaret, you've had that pet for a decade, it's very different.
Yeah, for sure. And even we've done a whole program on this previously, Rish, but the shortage of vets as well. So that puts pressure on vets as well. And it means that it's not easy to get in to see a vet. But just what Margaret was saying there about not being able to pay in installments makes it really hard because you've got to find a big lump sum of money to pay for some procedure that your animal might need. And I think this is a real pinch point as well, Rish, because sometimes if you can't pay that lump sum of money, then there's that pressure on to say, well, come on, could you do this for free? I mean, could you do this procedure for free? And then it puts the vet in a really tricky situation as well.
I know, and this is, again, why we're seeing 17% increase of dogs that are being surrendered to shelters. And I wonder, you know, whether that number is higher as well. So would VetiCare help? Would it bring more vets into the profession? Would it stop the huge number of pets being surrendered?
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
We're talking about the rising cost of owning a pet and should it be, well, subsidised in some way. A lot of this was proposed by Andy Medic. Now, Andy's actually called our talkback line. Andy, a lot of people think that, well, I don't own a pet. It's a privilege, not a right. You know, we don't have the right childcare access. We don't have dental health here. Why on earth should I be paying for someone's pet?
Okay, well, let's address a couple of points that you've made there to begin with. First of all, dental care is not a state responsibility. It's part of the federal Medicare system. And secondly, with childcare, there are a great number of people out there that pay their taxes that contribute to childcare who will never have children. We can't segregate in a good social democracy. We don't stop an individual policy from being enacted just because a section of the community doesn't access that service themselves.
There are already people saying, I don't have kids and I'm paying for people's childcare. I don't have pets. Yep. Why should I be paying for people's pets?
Well, their taxes already pay for childcare, so I'm saying that this should also help pay for those other situations. And I just want to address some things. I'm in furious agreement with Dr. Bronwyn Orr, about the fact that we have a vet crisis in Victoria. That was the initial reason for me bringing this policy to the Parliament, because we want to address that particular situation. And things that they were talking about are things like enormous financial pressures and partly for wildlife. That's why the other aspect of this bill, what it does is it actually, this policy, sorry, it actually enacts a publicly funded wildlife hospital situation across the state that alleviates the pressure on vets, that takes that financial pressure away from them being able to service paying customers. Mm. But also, we're not talking about 100% free public vet care across the board for every single person in Victoria. The motion specifically speaks to the fact that bulk billing will apply to pensioners and people on healthcare cards.
I think lots of people would be in agreement with
that. Might have a scheduled fee. Yeah, well, and for other people, there'll be things like if they're on a smaller income, there'll be a scheduled fee and a gap similar to what we have in Medicare, and that gap can be means tested so that they can pay what they can afford to.
You've said that this will probably cost about $10 million as it stands at the moment to pay for this VetiCare system. Would you be prepared to agree with a VetiCare light? Would you water it down in any way?
Oh, look, I don't think so. I think that what we're facing a vet crisis in Victoria and indeed across Australia, and we need to address that situation. We need to stop vets from leaving the system, and we need to encourage more vets to come into the system. And vets, in comparison to other healthcare workers, like doctors, et cetera, are actually well underpaid and not earning what they should, right? So we're trying to alleviate that situation. Now, in terms of actually paying for it, I believe that what we can do is look at the situation that we have, for instance, with the smoking lobby, the taxes that people pay on cigarettes actually pay for health organisation initiatives, we can do exactly the same. We could look at, for instance, the gambling revenue that's generated, or the gambling tax revenue that's generated by horse racing, greyhound racing, etc. And if we take just 0.1% of that, that could fund over $100 million a year into this system.
Andy Medic, it's fascinating that you called through and you were able to put that forward. Thanks so much, because you certainly started a huge conversation here on The Conversation Hour. Thanks so much. Let's have a chat to Mandy. Mandy's in Ocean Grove. G'day, Mandy. What did you want to say?
Oh, hi, guys. Look, first up, totally support Andy Medic's vision for vet care. I'm actually sort of a living example, if you like. I'm 66 and a half. For the past 6 years, I've been volunteering in a local animal shelter. I currently have 4 cats in my care, and my friends would testify that I am a crazy cat lady, in that I previously have spent probably up to $40,000 extending the life of a palliative care cat that I brought home from the shelter. Now, what I'm sort of getting to the point that I think our mistake is conflating pet care and animal welfare issues here, because I would say I'm an absolute proud, you know, supporter and worker for animal welfare, but I've had to step away now. I'm facing age pension days, and I've stepped away, among many reasons, from my animal welfare work in volunteer capacity, because I'm frightened that I'm going to see animals in the state that the palliative care cat was, that I took care of, and I am no longer going to be in a position to offer that cat or animal a home and
Mandy,
care.
I know. And this is the thing, because it's such an emotional topic, Jono. Yeah. There's a text here from Chris, very similar to Mandy, talking about sort of almost having palliative pets. I went through a breakup during COVID lockdowns and my dog was all I had. She's still here with a good quality of life, but she's costing me $1,000 per month in medication and vet bills just to keep her heart ticking.
$1,000 a month?
Yeah. I'm going to have to say goodbye, not because of lack of quality, but because I can't afford it anymore. It's going to rip my heart out. I hope the mental health system has room for one more. That's from Chris.
That's horrible. Horrible. And you're right, this is the intersection between emotion and finance, you know, and it's really, really tricky. And this is the pressure that I guess vets would feel every day when their clients come to them and say, look, I can't afford, but can you please keep my loved family member alive? I mean, that's the... I mean, I don't want to use the term emotional blackmail, but that's some of the pressure that vets are put under, you know?
Yeah. Casey Johnson is the founder of Homes for Huskies Rescue in Victoria. And Casey, you've seen a huge uptake in surrenders purely because of financial stress. Is that right?
Yeah, we've been experiencing it for the last several months, and it just keeps increasing from private surrenders to a lot of... We also work with Melbourne Pounds and Country Pounds, and because we're a breed-specific rescue, we're asked to take these dogs on because we know how to appropriately rehome them. And they're coming in thick and fast privately and through pounds. So just a mass influx. And I know most rescues across Victoria are also experiencing the same problem. You know, it's not just huskies, so it's becoming a real issue.
Mm. And, I mean, I feel for people who have to surrender their pets because of financial stress, but in your position, Casey, do you see this and just think that we are a bit selfish when it comes to pets because we adopt them and we get pets, you know, in the pandemic and during lockdowns when we feel like we need them, and then when we realise we haven't thought it through and we can't kind of financially support them, then we have to surrender them?
Yeah, absolutely. Financially is definitely a problem, but it's also a lot to do with circumstances changing as well, and also not understanding the breed, particularly when it comes to the huskies. Like, a lot of people got a husky puppy or dog through the pandemic, and they've now realized that that's not the right breed for them. They're not, you know, able to look after them correctly, so they're surrendering for those reasons as well. So
I guess that's the other thing that we've seen change over the last few years as well, is just the variety and the types of dogs in particular that people have now. Growing up, I don't think I would have seen a husky, you know, unless I was at the snow, right? I would not have seen a husky. The fact that there are so many of them now and they're being surrendered, is that a part of the bigger problem around us just not really understanding what we're doing and the responsibility that comes with pet ownership? If you're buying a husky and you live in a flat, then, you know, there's a lot of questions that are raised there.
Yeah, definitely. We've had many huskies come through to us as surrenders that have, you know, been living in an apartment, and people realise that's not the right living conditions for a husky. So there is definitely a large, you know, an increased number of huskies being bred too. So, you know, the problem sort of stems from there as well. So there's no stopping that. People are making money off these dogs and they don't care where they rehome them as long as they get the money. So
yeah, well, I think Richard from Somerville has a similar point to make. Richard, good morning. What point do you want to make?
I've got a few points, but one that I don't think has been touched on since I've been listening is how animals are bred. And you look at 100 years ago, dogs that now have very, very flat faces.
Oh, know, yeah.
Very little snout, if any.
Oh, we did a whole program on this, Richard. You should go back and have a listen to it. We're just looking at, are we breeding pets for cuteness? Because we want them to look cute and have these squishy faces, but in actual fact is causing huge healthcare, huge health issues for the pet. And, you know, we have veterinary operations now that are specifically just for little squishy faced dogs.
Yes, and as I said, my wife is a veterinarian. So that was one point. Another one too, though, is that there is, to me, one of the many issues is the responsibility of the owner. If you can afford a little dog, but you come in with three Great Danes, you know, there needs to be something there, and then can't afford it. There is a huge level of, on occasions, emotional blackmail for the vet to fix it. And they often do. And sometimes the people say, look, we'll fix you up. We'll give you $10 now and we'll fix you up. And they don't come back. And so the vet is, you know, under the pressure of the emotional difficulty, but also the financial difficulty.
I know, it's awful. And this is why a lot of people are leaving the profession or just not entering it in the first place. Just finally, Casey, would you agree there with Richard who called in, just that, you know, maybe just get yourself a little dog if that's what you need? You know, you don't.
Yeah.
I know you love huskies, and fair enough, but maybe we need to think about that.
They're definitely a breed specific, you know, people need to be the right type of person to own a husky, and they're the cutest little puppies, but they grow up and they're a high energy dog with a lot of challenges that, you know, present with them along the way if they're not, you know, trained properly, et cetera, from the beginning and socialised, et cetera. So, yeah, people need to do their research before they buy the breed, because that seems to be a large problem as well. So,
where are the dogs coming from? Are they coming from the RSPCA to you, or are people bringing them to you, or how?
So they're coming through private surrender. So people will come to us and ask us to take their husky for whatever reason that may be. We also work with Melbourne and Country Pounds. When they get a husky in, they will ask us to take the husky, so we get that as well. And also the RSPCA will ask us to take huskies that they can't rehome themselves. So, yeah.
Casey, thank you. And I'm sad to hear that there has been an uptick in surrendered huskies, but lovely to have you on. Thank you. Casey Johnson, founder of Homes for Huskies Rescue Victoria. And as we've been hearing, Rich, it's not just huskies. It's all varieties, all breeds of dog that are being surrendered at the moment because their owners just can't care for them. They just can't afford it.
Mary's in Werribee. Hi, Mary.
Oh, Rochelle, hello. How are you?
Good. What do you want to say?
This conversation is so close to home. We have two Griddles and a Jack Russell allegedly crossed with a pug that's got no pug in him at all. And Rusty is the baby, so he's only 12 months old. And he got quite sick 10, 12 days ago. He wasn't eating his food, and for Griddles that's just ridiculous. But we've had a 20-year relationship with the vet school at Werribee with all of our animals, and I can't speak highly enough of their professionalism and their compassion. Mm. They're just delightful. They're delightful with the animals and they're delightful with the owners. But when we took Rusty up there, so we took him on the Tuesday, he wasn't able to get an ultrasound until the Thursday, and we had to go up there and sort of go, hello, Thursday. He's been here since Tuesday. He's now lost another couple of kilos and he needs an ultrasound. So he got the ultrasound.
And this is all expensive, Mary, isn't it? This is really expensive. Like how much is it costing to care for Rusty at the moment?
So the surgery and Werribee Vet School, so we had to take him to Kensington to have surgery. It was $9,500 at the end of the day. Now, we have a very beautiful, healthy boy, but we've had to take...
Wow. I know, and it's taken all that stress too of days and days, and then in the end it's $9,000. Mary, I'm sorry that you had to go through all of that, but then there's a text here from Joseph in Essendon that says, the ABC has gone feral woke.
I love these ones.
Supporting free pet care. If morons can't afford a pet, they shouldn't have them. There are humans starving with no shelter. But then you hear these awful stories. You know, and maybe I just wonder, right? I came into this being a little bit like Joseph from Essendon going, come on, man, seriously, if you can't afford it, think about it. There's a huge responsibility in owning a pet. Don't take that for granted. But if you've had the pet for a long time, or if you're an aged pensioner, or if you're someone on a low income, maybe there's a way to do it that way.
Yep. So if you've got a healthcare card, then you're eligible to some form of subsidy for your vet care. Maybe that's an idea. And we did speak with the architect of all of this, Andy Medic from the Animal Justice Party earlier. He said he wasn't really willing to compromise. He didn't want to water it down in any way, but reckons that all of this would cost about $10 million. Let's have a chat now to Dr. Bronwyn Oak, who is the Chief Veterinarian with RSPCA Victoria. Where do you stand on this, Dr. Bronwyn? Would vetting care work? Do you agree with it?
It's an absolutely interesting concept. I like the idea of it because, especially as vets, we are often broached by clients who can't pay for these procedures. They are expensive, the amount of training, the amount of equipment that goes into it. My big question is, where are we going to find the vets to actually service it?
Yeah.
Because the vet industry is in dire straits as well.
But is this, I guess that's the point, and that's Andy's point, is that one way to bring more pets into the profession or to stop them walking away is to have some form of public system so that all of the pressure isn't on the private sector.
Yeah, and I think that would be a great idea, especially in this age of, I mean, we're really starting to recognise the issue of vet suicide, which is a massive thing, and that's one big area of the pressure. We have owners who are so emotionally involved with their pets. Their pet's part of their family, and it's really, really important that they get this healthcare, but sometimes they can't afford it. And then that gets placed back on the veterinarian. So it would alleviate some of that pressure, and I think it would possibly stop some people from walking from the job, which is a big issue that we have at the moment.
Does the average person know what it costs to own a pet? Let's just say a normal-sized, normal dog.
Let's go with Jack Russell.
Yeah, Jack, old school, right? Haven't seen one in about 20 years. But
Do people know how much it costs to keep a Jack Russell?
I don't think they do. And I think it's so variable between the different species you have and whether your animal has a healthcare condition or something like that. If you're looking at a big breed dog, a large breed dog, you need to account for the fact that that dog will be eating as much as a human. And that's the cost you need to factor in. That's an extra family member, an adult family member. And you can scale it down a little bit. And certainly by buying some of the – it's a bigger offset to buy some of the more reputable brands, your sort of Royal Canins, your Heels, that sort of thing. But those bags of food will last you for quite a while. So if you can afford to sort of save up and splash out on the higher quality brands, they can last you a bit longer than actually buying the supermarket stuff, which is really interesting when you do the economics of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think more of us now are really looking at where we're spending our money, how we can buy in bulk, how we can buy cheaper cuts, all that kind of cost-saving, budget-saving elements to our household. When we look at different people that maybe could be or should be eligible for a form of veticare, what if you've taken a surrendered animal? Should there be, and often that maybe that surrendered animal isn't just because of cost, there might be some other issues associated or might have some health issues. Should you get some kind of subsidy or be eligible for subsidy if you've taken a dog that had been in a shelter?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really interesting point. Are we talking about someone who's actually surrendering their dog because they can't afford to look after
someone who's instead of going and buying, say, a new purebred or whatever it may be, if someone's
a groodle,
saying,
a schnoodle, one of those ones,
one of the oodles.
If you choose, you make that decision not to buy a designer dog or not to buy a dog from a breeder and rescue one. Yeah. What should they get special treatment?
I would probably be in support of that. We have a number of dogs in the shelter.
you can
tick that off. We'll paint it to you, Rochelle.
Thank you.
But it would be great for us to see these animals moving through the shelter faster, because the best place for them is in a home. Behaviourally, it's the best place for them. It's the best way for them to give what they have to give to people, which is why people get a pet, because they give you so much. These animals have so much love, and we want to see them in homes. So, look, I'm in support of anything that gets these pets out into good homes. Where
do you think it will happen, Bronwyn? Can you see? I mean, people are so outraged around this that pets look like they're being given would be given greater priority than humans. What would do you think it would happen?
Realistically, I think it would take a lot to get it off the ground. It's a massive project. And even getting things like Medicare, I mean, you see how difficult it is to get a universal healthcare system up in America. How are we going to get a universal healthcare system up for pets in Australia? It is an issue. And where do you draw the line? Where do people come into it, and where do pets come into it? And there's definitely a crossover, because pets are very important for human health. We know that. We know that they provide a great deal of benefit to the mental health of humans. But where do you draw that line?
Yeah, and this is the tricky thing
that I can come up with.
No.
Yeah.
No, this is what we're trying to work towards, Dr. Bronwyn. Thank you for helping us do that. Dr. Bronwyn Oak, Chief Veterinarian with the RSPCA Victoria. And this, what really strikes me, Rish, is that we're emotional people, and we act on emotion, right? So, and particularly we did that during the pandemic. Lots of us were so lonely, so we wanted a companion. And what we're talking about
today, home as well too.
Yes, that's right. And so we make these emotional decisions, but we're not necessarily thinking financially, and we're not necessarily thinking about what happens if this pet needs a medical procedure, etc. So this is the situation we're in. But do you think VetiCare is the right idea? So a publicly funded network of hospitals that you could access if you've got a pet, maybe only if you've got a healthcare card you can access it. Or do you think that owning a pet is a privilege, not a right?
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
This is an emotional roller coaster, Jono, right? And just when I think, maybe I'm coming around a little bit, you'll get a text, and I've lost it now because they are coming in. You know, literally we have hundreds and hundreds of texts. One person saying, seriously, really, come on, I've been waiting 7 weeks for cancer treatment and to get the right type of care. And the amount of texts that are coming in around dental, and it does feel like that no matter how you try and approach this, it becomes an animal versus human conversation. You know, is there only so much money to be spread
around? I think that's intended.
Around?
That's intended. I mean, the name of this is VetiCare. It's a spin-off of Medicare. There's supposed to
but
be
no matter
a
what
comparison.
You name it. If it's a public system,
is
it coming at the cost of something that could be going to human beings?
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that it's an election year. I don't think this is going to get up in an election year. But that's not to say we shouldn't be having the discussion. And there may well be some other measures put in place for people with pets. I'm not sure what that would look like, but this is a big problem, as we've seen today on the talkback line, people telling us some pretty hard stories about, you know, paying $1,000 a week for pets who need medication, etc. It's a really, really tricky situation, Rish.
Tim's in Bridgewater. G'day, Tim.
Oh, g'day, guys. Look, just listening to it, it's one of those things that sounds nice to have, but just thinking about it a bit more, it's just so impractical. The amount of money involved, the amount of scrutiny that the system would have to come under. And I'm going along with those points about if we can't really fund our health system properly, if we can't really have a dental system properly, like, it's just that, I suppose for me, there's two types of animals in this world. There's humans and there's the rest of the animals. And we've got to put our care so much above an animal. And, like, it sounds harsh, but maybe culturally we've got to be from an early age, from childhood, be brought up about what pets involve, and that if you get a pet, then it's going to cost you money, so you have to set aside that money. And if you're not well off, then you have to have it, like, I had my own situation in the last 12 months where I had to get a cat put down, but I'd always thought about the day would come when the amount of money involved is just going to be too much. My cat, I took it in and it had been bitten by a snake, and to treat the cat would have cost $3,500, nearly $4,000 to identify the snake and give it the antivenin, and even then maybe it wasn't going to be the answer. Look, I went back to the car and pulled my eyes out for 5 minutes, but I had to let the cat go. And I think culturally maybe we're just going to be brought up to say pets are lovely, but these are the responsibilities and these are the shortcomings of having a pet. If you haven't got a lot of money, then you're going to have to let it go.
Tim, I wonder, right, and this is a really uncomfortable thing to say, but, you know, we had similar circumstances growing up as well, and I wonder if we just think or we feel obligated that we have to just pay more and more and more to keep pets and animals alive now, more so than we did growing up. Is it because we've got more disposable income now? Is it because we think of pets differently now? What's the reason? Like, I can remember multiple pets being put down in our household, and now I'm thinking, well, maybe with thousands of dollars they could have been saved, but my parents just went, nah, man, we can't
do that.
Too much
money,
Well, when I grew up, we had, I was one of six kids, so the pets were really fair way down the pecking order, so to speak. But I just think, you know, it is a nice fuzzy thing, but when you think about the logistics of it, you know, how much money is going to be involved, and then it's like to monitor this system to make sure that it's been carried out fairly, and then there'd be rorts, and then it's a shame. Like, pets have been elevated, I got little doubt how much money people spend on them, but maybe there are people with lots of money who can spend it. I'm amazed when I hear people say, I spent $7,000 or $8,000 at a broken leg.
Well, people agree with you, Tim. There's texts in you saying exactly, Tim, exactly what you said. But it sounds harsh, doesn't it? Yeah. And I feel like I'm going to get hate mail. You know. But it's shifted. I think the conversation and the focus and the money that we spend and the treatments available and possible has shifted greatly over the last decade or so.
For sure, and like advances in veterinary science. Yes. But what really struck me was when that person sent through a text saying, I'm paying $1,000 a month to keep my dog alive. It's just, it's a lot of money. Yvonne Hong is CEO of Pets of the Homeless. Good morning, Yvonne. What are you seeing at your organisation?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me. We're definitely seeing a lot of people that are struggling, more so now than ever, because with the rising cost of living. So it's not just vet care. We see that with pet food as well, and just general maintenance of a pet, I guess. And that's where we come in to help.
We've seen a lot of texts saying, what about places like food banks and charities where we donate food? Maybe we should be thinking about donating pet food as well. And the conversation around, well, if you can't afford a pet, then you just shouldn't have one. When it comes to those that have home insecurity or are homeless, I guess you'd probably be having to fight that argument all the time that a pet is needed and probably more vital, especially given that you maybe don't have anywhere to live.
That's right. So, I mean, we're talking about situations where people are not getting the pet when they found themselves in a situation when they're experiencing homelessness. We're talking about people who have homes before or have jobs and everything, but one thing led to another and now they found themselves without a home. You know, they might not have family and friends to help and all they have is their pet. So that might not seem a lot to a lot of people, but for someone that is already struggling, having to give up their pet is actually asking a lot of them to have to go through the additional trauma of losing something else when that is the only thing that they have left. I guess when you see it as, you know, like, is a pet essential to someone? I would say yes, because I have seen in so many cases where the pet is actually a driver for change for that person. You know, they would hang on to hope that there's a better tomorrow and they would actually try their best to change the situation they're in so that they could continue hanging on to their pet.
So this would be something that you would support then, do you think, some form of publicly funded vet care, especially for those that are homeless?
I mean, if, you know, in an ideal world, if we can, then yes, why not? But I guess, you know, I understand with everyone else's argument is how do we fund it? So yeah, I mean, until they can figure that out, when yeah. you know, yeah, that's a difficult part.
Yeah,
yeah. So, this is where you're glad. We're glad to say, look, well, that's, you know, that's someone else's problem, not ours. But look, thank you very much, Yvonne, for chatting with us. Yvonne Hong, CEO of Pets of the Homeless, saying that pets are not discretionary. For some people, they are absolutely essential. Kate is in Echuca. Morning, Kate.
Morning. How are you today? And thank you for taking my call. My issue is with pet insurance. So I have rescued a little dog. She was one when we got her from the Albury Animal Centre. And it wasn't until we'd had her for a couple of weeks that we realised that she has an issue with her back legs, that they pop in and out all the time, and it makes her very tired, and she doesn't walk very far because she gets, you know, probably a bit of pain and et cetera. So I have rang, we have a general cost of what it's going to cost to have the legs fixed.
Yeah.
And I rang the pet insurance places and they said I cannot get pet insurance for her because it's a pre-existing condition.
Yeah. And we've heard that before, Kate, that if you have a dog that has pre-existing issues that you can't get pet insurance. So the whole argument today, John, of, oh, well, just get pet insurance as well. It's not that simple.
And it's expensive as well. No, it's not. You can't just pick up pet insurance on an animal that might have a pre-existing condition like Kate there. But for me today, Rish, this has really highlighted that we are emotional beings, aren't we? We make decisions based on emotion and sometimes we don't think through the consequences of that. And I know a lot of people have been telling quite, you know, emotional stories today about how pets have been so important in their lives. And we should also emphasise that if you are going through a really tough time, you can call Lifeline 13 11 14. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
The amount that people love their pets is, you know, it goes without saying. I just wonder how many of us realise what they cost, what the true cost is. And we've had a few people talk about designer dogs and designer pets. We have done entire programs on that and it was fascinating. It's still a program that people want to talk to me about. So go back through the Conversation Hour podcast, download that, because a lot of those issues have come up. And we've also done a heap of programs on why we just don't have enough vets at the moment, especially in regional Victoria. So if today's been a topic of interest, there are multiple programs on the Conversation Hour podcast. Go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts and you can go back and you can binge on animal and vet related stories. Until tomorrow, be safe. Be well, take care, look after those pets, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.